Appendix. A Brief History of Computer Hackerism.
Now it came to pass that Microsoft had waxed great and mighty among the microchip corporations, mightier than any of the mainframe corporations before it had waxed. And Gates' heart was hardened, and he swore unto his customers and their engineers the words of this curse. Children of von Neumann, hear me. IBM and the mainframe corporations bound thy forefathers with grave and perilous licenses, such that ye cried unto the spirits of Turing and von Neumann for deliverance. Now I say unto ye, I am greater than any corporation before me. Will I loosen your licenses? Nay, I will bind thee with licenses twice as grave and 10 times more perilous than my forefathers. I will capture and enslave thee as no generation has been enslaved before. And wherefore will ye cry then unto the spirits of Turing and von Neumann and more? They cannot hear ye. I am become a greater power than they. Ye shall cry only unto me, and shall live by my mercy and my wrath. I am the gates of hell. I hold the portal to MSNBC, and the keys to the blue screen of death. Be ye afraid. Be ye greatly afraid. Serve only me, and live.
So opens the Gospel according to Tux, a hacker Bible published on the web. Tux is the name of the penguin mascot of the Linux computer operating system, created in 1991 by Finnish hacker Linus Torvalds at the age of 22. In the past few years, Linux has attracted a great deal of attention as one of the most serious challengers to Microsoft's primacy. Anyone may download Linux for free, but this is not the primary difference between Linux and Windows. What distinguishes Linux from the dominant commercial software model epitomized by Microsoft's products is first and foremost its openness. In the same way scientific researchers allow all others in their fields to examine and use their findings to be tested and developed further, hackers who take part in the Linux project permit all others to use, test, and develop their programs. In research, this is known as the scientific ethic. In the field of computer programming, it is called the open source model, source code being a program's DNA, its form in the language used by programmers to develop it. Without the source code, a person can use a program but is not able to develop it in new directions. This kinship with the academic research model is not accidental. Openness may be seen as a legacy that hackers have received from the university. The Gospel according to Tux elevates to heroic status the researchers who openly shared their findings while creating the theoretical foundation for the computer, chief among them Alan Turing and John von Neumann. Optimistically, the Gospel according to Tux goes on to relate how Torvalds revives this spirit in the world of computers.
Now in those days there was in the land of Helsinki a young scholar named Linus the Torvald. Linus was a devout man, a disciple of RMS, Richard Stallman, another famous hacker, and mighty in the spirit of Turing, von Neumann, and more. One day, as he was meditating on the architecture, Linus fell into a trance and was granted a vision. And in the vision he saw a great penguin, serene and well-favored, sitting upon an ice-floe eating fish. And at the sight of the penguin, Linus was deeply afraid, and he cried unto the spirits of Turing, von Neumann, and more for an interpretation of the dream. And in the dream the spirits of Turing, von Neumann, and more answered and spoke unto him, saying, "Fear not, Linus, most beloved hacker. You are exceedingly cool and fruity. The great penguin which you see is an operating system which you shall create and deploy unto the earth. The ice floe is the earth and all the systems thereof, upon which the penguin shall rest and rejoice at the completion of its task. And the fish on which the penguin feeds are the crufty licensed code bases which swim beneath all the earth's systems. The penguin shall hunt and devour all that is crufty, gnarly, and bogacious. All code which wriggles like spaghetti, or is infested with blighting creatures, or is bound by grave and perilous licenses, shall it capture. And in capturing shall it replicate, and in replicating shall it document, and in documentation shall it bring freedom, serenity, and most cool fruitiness to the earth and all who code therein.
Linux did not invent the open source model, nor did it appear out of nowhere. Linux is a Unix-like operating system built on the foundation of two earlier hacker projects. Most important to Linux was the GNU operating system project begun by Richard Stallman in 1983. Stallman, who started out in MIT's AI lab, continues to work in the tradition of that first nexus of hackerism. The other matrix for Linux is BSD Unix, created by Bill Joy in 1977. BSD stands for Berkeley Software Distribution, in homage to its origins at another traditional hacker center, the University of California at Berkeley, where Joy started developing his operating system when he was a graduate student in his 20s. Another important chapter in the history of computer hackerism came with the birth of the Internet. Its true beginnings date back to 1969, which was also when hackers Ken Thompson and Dennis Ritchie wrote the very first version of Unix. The U.S. Department of Defense's research unit, ARPA, Advanced Research Projects Agency, played an important role in setting up the Internet's predecessor, the ARPANET. However, the extent and significance of this governmental input is usually exaggerated. In Inventing the Internet, the most thorough history of the Internet to date, Janet Abate demonstrates how the appointment of former university researchers to managerial positions caused the Internet to develop according to self-organizing principles common to scientific practice. As a result, the most significant portion of that development was soon directed by the Network Working Group, a cluster of hackers culled from a talented group of university students. The Network Working Group operated on the open source model. Anyone was allowed to contribute ideas, which were then developed collectively. The source codes of all solutions were published from the very beginning, so that others could use, test, and develop them. This model is still followed. The composition and name of this spearheading hacker group has changed many times along the way. Currently, it is known as the Internet Engineering Task Force, and it operates under the Internet Society founded by Vinton Cerf, a charter member of the group from his days as a graduate student in computer science at UCLA. Cerf has played an important role in almost all of the technological advancements in the evolution of the net. One aspect has always remained the same, however. The Internet does not have any central directorate that guides its development. Rather, its technology is still developed by an open community of hackers. This community discusses ideas, which become standards only if the larger Internet community thinks they are good and starts to use them. Sometimes these hacker ideas have taken the net in totally unanticipated directions, such as when Ray Tomlinson introduced email in 1972. He chose the at symbol we still use in email addresses. Reflecting on this development, Abate notes that there seems to have been no corporate participation in the design of the Internet. Like its predecessor, the ARPANET, the Internet was designed informally and with little fanfare by a self-selected group of experts. Nor was the World Wide Web, the global hypertext built on the basis of the Internet, a corporate or governmental construction. Its prime mover was an Oxford-educated Englishman, Tim Berners-Lee, who started planning the design of the web in 1990, while working at the Swiss Particle Physics Research Center, CERN. Behind Berners-Lee's unassuming exterior, he is a strong idealist who remains outspoken about his vision of how the web can make this a better world. The web is more a social creation than a technical one. I designed it for a social effect, to help people work together, and not as a technical toy. The ultimate goal of the web is to support and improve our web-like existence in the world. Gradually, other hackers joined him in this effort, as he describes in his book, Weaving the Web, 1999. Interested people on the Internet provided the feedback, stimulation, ideas, source code contributions, and moral support that would have been hard to find locally. The people of the Internet built the web in true grassroots fashion. As the group expanded, Berners-Lee organized a community similar to SERP's Internet Society, the World Wide Web Consortium, in an effort to forestall a commercial takeover of the web. Personally, Berners-Lee has resolutely refused all commercial offers, which one of his friends has characterized as typical of his general outlook. As technologists and entrepreneurs were launching or merging companies to exploit the web, they seemed fixated on one question: how can I make the web mine? Meanwhile, Tim was asking, how can I make the web yours? The most important individual behind the web's final breakthrough was Marc Andreessen, who studied at the University of Illinois at Champaign-Urbana. In 1993, at the university's National Center for Supercomputing Applications, the 20-year-old Andreessen and a few other hackers created a user-friendly graphical browser for the PC. This program, distributed with open source code, soon led to the even better known and more rapidly disseminated Netscape Navigator browser. Although at the moment the Internet and the web, together the net, dominate our collective imagination, their mass breakthrough would not have been possible, of course, without the creation of that other remarkable invention of our time, the personal computer. Its ideational history goes back to the first MIT hackers who pioneered interactive computing. In their time, the computer field was still dominated by IBM's model of batch-processed mainframe computers, in which programmers did not have direct access to the computer, but had to receive permission to pass their programs on to a special operator. It could take days to receive the results. In contrast to this method, the MIT hackers favored interactive computing on mini-computers, in which the programmer could write his program directly into the computer, see the results, and immediately make desirable corrections. In terms of social organization, the difference is great. In an interaction that eliminates the operator, individuals can employ technology in a more liberating manner. This elimination of the operators, the high priesthood of the computer world, is experientially comparable to the elimination of telephone operators in the history of the telephone. It meant a freeing up of direct exchange between individuals. The MIT hackers also programmed the first ever computer game, in which a user could, for the first time, experience the possibilities of the graphical user interface. In Steve Russell's 1962 Space War, two vessels armed with torpedoes, guided by controls designed by the club, join battle in outer space. Peter Sampson added a planetary background to the game, called Expensive Planetarium, because its purpose was to show the stars in exactly the same positions they could have been seen by looking out the window, but much more expensively, as user time on the computer was very valuable back then. Anyone was allowed to copy the game, and its source code was available. The final breakthrough of the personal computer was made possible by these mental preparations. The decisive further step was taken by Steve Wozniak, who was a member of the Homebrew Computer Club, a group of hackers who started meeting regularly in the Bay Area in the mid-70s. In 1976, using the information shared freely within the club, he built, at the age of 25, the first personal computer for the use of people without engineering degrees, the Apple I. To appreciate the importance of this accomplishment, we must remember that the computers preceding it had often been machines the size of refrigerators that had to be kept in special climate-controlled rooms. The CEOs of the world's largest computer firms did not believe in a future for personal computers, expressing opinions such as, "I think there's a world market for maybe five computers." Thomas Watson, president of IBM, 1943. And, "There's no reason anyone would want a computer in their home." Ken Olson, co-founder and chairman of Digital Equipment Corporation, 1977. These predictions might even have come true if Woz had not succeeded in humanizing the computer. Woz's achievement in making the computer available to everyone reflected the Bay Area's overall countercultural spirit and its concern with empowering people in various ways. Just before Woz made his first computer, Ted Nelson, a visionary whose charisma can make him seem like a frenzied shaman, heralded the coming of the personal computer in a self-published book called Computer Lib, 1974. Nelson is best known for expressing a vision of a worldwide hypertext long before the advent of the web, and he is in fact the inventor of the term hypertext. In his book, his rallying cry was, "Computer power to the people! Down with cybercrud!" Cybercrud is a term Nelson coined to refer to ways of putting things over on people using computers. Later on, Woz himself stressed that the atmosphere of the Homebrew Computer Club, which Nelson visited, energized him in his work on the Apple I. I came from a group that was what you might call beatniks or hippies. A lot of technicians who talked radical about a revolution in information and how we were going to totally change the world and put computers in homes. In accord with the hacker ethic, Woz openly distributed blueprints of his computer to others and published bits of his program. His hacker-created computer inspired the larger personal computer revolution, the consequences of which are everywhere around us. This is Oliver Wyman. We hope you have enjoyed this production of The Hacker Ethic by Pekka Heemanen. This program was produced and directed by Paul Rubin. Copyright 2001 by Pekka Heemanen. Production copyright 2001, Random House, Inc. All rights reserved. The book, The Hacker Ethic, is available wherever Random House books are sold.